So you began the question saying, when one is experiencing intensity of feeling, emotion, to ask ourselves, what am I holding on to? What am I attached to? And if I said to Naya, if you ask yourself that question, what comes up for you? What is it about the Republican Convention and what's going on there and what it represents? What is it that stirs you up? And again, I want to just, because I think we need to understand that there is, and this is very important for us to understand, right? The clear seeing of something and understanding of something does not necessarily be congruent with heavy-duty emotionality. So we want to watch, what is it, you know, I kind of know my values, I kind of know my belief systems, I kind of know the way I live and how I want to, right? And I know there are other people that don't see it that way, and right? I know all that. But then if I said, okay, Naya, but what stirs you up? That's where you want to look. Because, not because it's wrong, but because, as you say, it may cause you to suffer. Your harmony, your equilibrium, your sense of well-being is disturbed. Yes. So what is it that you're holding on to? If I just spoke for you, I think you would prefer that everyone shared your values.
Someone.
Yeah, yeah. I'm of the same ilk. Yeah. We think we're right, right? And we think we have the right values, the right attitudes, the right program. And it is disturbing, right, to live in a world not only where people see it differently, but they actually have the effrontery to get together. Right? Take over cities. And just act as if they're the only act in town, right? Yeah, and they were absolutely right. Yeah, it is not easy for us. We have to practice deeply. Right? We have to practice deeply what? We have to practice deeply with our seeing our own attachment, right, to our own rightness. And again, in the world of duality, the way it operates is, if I am attached to my own rightness, I am also equally attached to the other's wrongness. One doesn't exist without the other. Right? So the more strongly I think that I'm right, I'm true, I'm pure, I got right, I have the inside track, the more I have to believe that those that don't have it are all the opposite of me. And now they are what? They are separate from me. Right? You know, they are no longer my brothers and sisters. I mean, you know, we may have brothers and sisters, don't we? And we may have family members. And sometimes we may have family members who have very different political views or other kinds of views that we share. But because we acknowledge family connections, we are still able to relate to them, aren't we? You know, because we are still acknowledging some kind of connection. But what we often do societally these days is we cut that, don't we? We cut that and we see them as other than. And we forget that these are also human beings who, like us, want to be happy, don't want to suffer, are looking at situations and are also trying to find solutions. Now, we may say that their solutions are not good solutions. We may say they're being manipulated. You know, we may say all kinds of things. We may say they're ignorant, right? And that may be true. Let's say it's true. But still, the truth is, we exist in the world with them, don't we? You see, it's, you know, some of this, I think, for me, is informed by wider beliefs. Like who's inhabiting this world? You know, there are 6-7 billion human beings, right? At the human realm. There are seven billion human beings. Now, if we looked around this world, would we say that these 7 billion human beings, this is an enlightened universe, filled with an amazing amount of enlightened beings, all coming from a place of selflessness, egolessness, all living from a place of wisdom and compassion? Is that what we would say about this world? No. What do we say about the human beings in this world?
They're insane.
They're insane is like one, from a certain point of view, one could say that. But they're all human, but most of them are what? Very much living from agendas that have to do with what? Ego, right? Self, greed, survival, greed, selfishness, take for me, me ahead of others. You know what I mean? It's that kind of world, isn't it? As well as, unfortunately, where leadership is involved, we often have leadership these days, which is not, we could say, very enlightened leadership. So we see in the past that even though human beings may be characterized by kind of a complexity of development, we might say, oftentimes leaders, spiritual leaders, social leaders, political leaders, can often bring out the best in people. I mean, it seems like these days we have leaders that are often bringing out the worst in people. Right? So it's kind of magnifies it. And that, but again, that is the way it is, isn't it? Ah, yeah. Isn't it? That is the way it is. And so, certainly, when things, because I've read a little bit, then I can feel, that little piece in me goes, right? And yet, so what? What does that help? Right? What does that help? Does it stop that from happening? No. Right? All it does is what? Disturbs my own equanimity, my own peace of mind, right? Which is not beneficial either. So it doesn't change the situation, and it doesn't facilitate anything positive in me. My sense is we need a path in life, each of us as individuals. Right? And when you have found your path in life, and you have established that path within yourself, based on how you want to live, how you want to relate, the values that you want to inculcate in your life and share with others, but then you walk your path. And then you walk your path. And you walk your path as everybody's walking with you, and you walk your path if you're alone. Because it's your path and you know it's the right path. Right? And if we're always looking around, judging everybody else's path, it can be, you know what it can be. And that takes training because, again, we know, it's interesting, there's this very classic, wonderful, wonderful book, teaching in the Mahayana Buddhist tradition called The Way of the Bodhisattva by this 8th century great master called Shantideva. I mean, if you ever want to read, I mean, it's really a classic of just religious literature. It's just absolutely wonderful, a vision of what it means to be a human being. But in the chapter entitled Patience, which is sort of what we're talking about here, it's interesting, he posits something that psychologically in America we don't see. He says patience is the opposite of anger, which is interesting. And what he says is that anger comes from not understanding the causes and conditions that have created whatever situation or person we are angry at. So in a certain way, patience isn't the right word. He really means that the opposite of anger, irritation, frustration is understanding and acceptance. Because if I said to you, let's say, for example, Mitt Romney drives you nuts, right? Or he's one of the ones you, right? Let's just say that. But it's interesting because what we would, if we asked ourselves, well, if I grew up in Mitt Romney's household and had Mitt Romney's father and mother and had grown up and had every circumstance that he had had, right? Might not I be just like him? It's interesting. Because we often act as if everybody is acting very much from free choice and free will, but the truth is, most people, like ourselves, are very conditioned by our experiences. We think, oh, well, you know, Naya may think I just have these wonderful values and I'm such a, you know what I mean? But if we thought about it, we realize, no, I picked these up along the way. You know, from human beings, parents, family, situations, right? That I was exposed to. Now, the fact that I respond, I mean, there is a personal piece there. But we realize that much of who and what we are is because of circumstances, and that each of us is product of causes and conditions. And again, if we were exposed to the causes and conditions, the life situation, parents, upbringing of this other person that we just think is horrible, we might realize, well, if I had those same situations and circumstances, I could be very much like them. Right. And that produces understanding. It doesn't mean that you don't take a stand against or stand for something else. But that anger, which can often lead to judgment and hatred, which only leads to more division, which is exactly what so bothers us about the other side. We think they're what? Intolerant. And yet are we not often as intolerant as they are, but just in a different way? You know, and, you know, how are we going to get out of this mess? You know, how are we going to get out of this mess? You know, it's like, I remember years ago when I used to be involved in doing parent education, you know, with abusive parents. See, the bottom line is that hitting works. See, hitting works. If a child is doing something that you don't want them to do and you whack them, in that moment, they'll stop doing it, right? Now, the longer-term consequences to the development of that child, to the relationship between that parent and child, is certainly significant. But in the short run, that kind of angry response works. But in the bigger picture, it causes great suffering, great division. So, you know, this kind of divisive, angry, blaming, hating, intolerant kind of situation that goes on in our political, in the short run, it feels good. I'm right, you're wrong, right? But in terms of building a cohesive society where people come together to really deal, you know, in a wise, intelligent, compassionate ways with problems that affect all of us, it doesn't work for that, does it? Because when you demean somebody, when you act toward them as if they're idiots, that is not a great opening for dialogue and reconciliation. See, you know, it's like when you live with somebody, right? See, if I don't live with you, Naya, right, and I run into you in the street, and you're doing something that I might consider stupid, and I just tell you off, right? You go your way, I go my way. It's no big deal, is it? But if you and I are going home together and we live in the same house, it is a big deal, isn't it? You see what I'm saying? It's a big deal. It's like that. You know, it's the context. And that is why we know that the great, the Gandhis and the Martin Luther Kings and the people, you know, this is what they teach, because they understand. You know, that's why they say, or like Jesus, you have to love your enemy. Well, why do you have to love your enemy? Because you live with them. they are part of your society. They're part of your culture. They're part of your bigger human family. And if you can't live with them, if you create such divisiveness or hatred or separation, that's only going to create more of that in the future. There's no way out of that. That's why, the Buddha said, hatred can never be ended by hatred. It's a famous quote from the Dhammapada. Hatred can never be ended by more hatred. Violence can never be ended by violence. Right? Hatred and violence can only be ended by love. There's no other way. Right? Now, we can stop violence with violence. We know that. Because that's what we've been doing for 2,000 years in the West, right? We make war to stop war, which only creates the situations for more war. So that is why we now live in a world where there's endless war, right? Because we think when there's violence, the way we respond to violence is with more violence, which again, in the short run, may end that violence, but it only creates the seeds for more violence, right? In the same way, in our personal relationships, right? Anger and violence, whether through physical actions or verbal actions or more deeply in our thoughts, cannot lead to anything good in relationship. Or am I wrong? Anything that leads to good in relations is goodness. It doesn't mean you can't tell somebody that they've hurt your feelings or they've disappointed you or you're angry at them in a nice constructive way. But that acting out verbally, acting out physically, which all begins in the mind, right, only creates more suffering. And so what occurs, right, in the smallest of relationships is also operating in the world. So again, take something like climate change. I mean, it's, right? I mean, the whole scientific world, I mean, everything's melting, right? Any idiot would see what's going on, right? I mean, 95 or 99% of the world scientists have all agreed, what's going on, and yet what? But people say it's not going on. Absolute, complete denial, fabrication. Well, what are we going to do? Should we shoot them all? Sometimes we may want to. But, where's that going to lead? Because what? We have to live with them. We all share this planet. And if we're ever going to solve this problem, we have to, this is why wisdom and understanding and understanding cause and effect is so important. It gives us the capacity to come out of our narrow, constricted selves with our own beliefs, our own truths, our own self-rightness, so we can let go of all that and deal with things as they are. How are they? They're a mess. It's a mess to clean up. We're like people, we do the dishes and then we're disappointed when the next morning we have to do them again. Why do I got to keep doing, you know, every time I got to do dishes? I like just to do them once and get it over with. All right, just to clean my house one time in a lifetime and never have to clean it again. But the truth is what? What's the truth, Naya? We have to clean our house, don't we? Because we keep making a mess, don't we? Right. Well, it's like that in the world. It's a mess. And to me, it's really quite simple for each of us. You know, I think the question for each of us is, am I going to be someone who contributes to the mess, or am I going to be somebody who cleans up the mess? Am I somebody who's going to contribute to the continuation of suffering in this world, or do I want to be someone who contributes to the healing of the world? And then you just do it. You know, in Buddhism, you often hear about non-attachment to outcome. Maybe you've read that. Non-attachment to outcome, right? That's what we're talking about, right? Non-attachment to outcome, in this case, means, we act in the world, even knowing we may never succeed. Do we know justice is going to reign? No. There was nothing in human history that would ever give us that. That's just a belief, right? Do we know that an enlightened society is where humankind is heading? No. There is nothing that convinces us of that, right? Just the opposite. But yet what? Does that mean we give up in despair? We could, if we're attached to outcome. If the way I am in the world is about, producing the desired result, then you can get frustrated. You could despair. You could give up. You could get indifferent. Right? But if you understand that the meaning of life, the most meaningful way to live one's life, is to be of benefit to others, is to help others in any way we can, is to live in an enlightened way, for one's, because that produces the most happiness for oneself to live that way. And then that's just the way you live, irrespective of outcome. Because attachment to outcome is another kind of game that ego plays. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to be this way if it all works out the way I want. Can you see how ego's playing, right? If I don't win, I'm going to take my marbles home. It's sort of like that, right? People get frustrated. Well, you know, try to help this person. They don't do what I say. Screw them. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not very compassionate, right? You may say, I try to help this person, I've tried many times, nothing I do is helping them, so therefore I'm not going to keep doing it because it's not really benefiting them. You see, when you see it that way, the emphasis is on them. You see, I want to help them. I want to be of benefit to them, right? And what I'm doing is not of benefit to them, so therefore I will stop it. But if you go, I'm not helping them because they're not changing the way I want them to change, the emphasis is on what? On me, right? And that's about ego and self. So it can look the same, but it's coming from a very different place. And that's very important. Because we want to act, even with our compassion, even with our love, even with our kindness, and even with our desire to help, from a place of wisdom. Understanding. Well, that was a long-winded answer. Forgive me, Naya. You probably asked a very simple question. Did I answer your question? What? And let me also say, there, just to come back finally to your question, yeah, you know, just because they're, putting it all over, you don't have to listen to it. Right? I mean, I think it's good to be informed, you know, because we do live in this world, and I think it's good to be informed about it. But we don't have to be obsessive. You know, I mean, it used to be, you know, you read a paper, but now you can get the news nonstop, right? I mean, so just because it's out there nonstop doesn't mean we have to attend to it nonstop. We can be in control of it, because especially for news that you say even at your best kind of difficult to hear, right? So it's, you know, if you have control over it, probably don't expose yourself too much, but expose yourself to enough that you can just take in enough and you can go, yeah, that's what's going on. You know, not everybody sees it the way I see it. You know, and they may be, I remember when I lived in Naples, I had this couple that used to help me in my garden and tree work. And they were some of the nicest, kindest people. I mean, they'd give the shirt off their back. They were always helping. But they were probably what are called right-wing evangelicals. I mean, they would be out there working the garden, and I don't listen to those kind of programs, but they would listen to somebody by the name of Rush Limbaugh. Loud. In the garden. And they just, you know, and I'd never heard this stuff, and I'd listen to this stuff, and I'd go, wow, this stuff is terrible. Toxic. You know, and these were the nicest people, and they loved it. I mean, who? You know?
Go figure.
So it's that kind of world.